Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office Scandal for Computer Weekly in 2009.
And my name is Nick Wallace. I wrote a book called The Great Post Office Scandal last year.
So this episode has quite a lot going on. First off, for those of you who are newish to the story and maybe listening to this podcast because of the activity around the inquiry restarting, we are going to give you a very quick potted history of the whole scandal, the whole story, so that you know a little bit about it and why the inquiry has been set up and how we got here.
And then we're going to hear Rebecca's exclusive interview with David Enright, a solicitor who's representing more than 100 sub-postmasters at the inquiry.
And then you, Nick, are going to tell us about what you have been able to find out about what will happen in this first week, because it's not entirely clear from the inquiry website and it's not quite straightforward until next week.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I don't obviously have a full handle on things because people are keeping their cards quite close to their chest, but literally before we started recording in the last hour, I've had some documents sent to me, so I'm going to try and make sense of them in a few moments' time. I think we should also mention before we go any further that today, the 10th of October 2022, we have launched a crowdfunding campaign to try and help us cover the inquiry and continue to make this podcast, because, well, it's going to go on for a very long time. And what I have found through my previous adventures in crowdfunding is that by being there as often as possible, it really does make a difference to what you hear in the various hearings that have gone on. I'm talking mainly about court cases, but this is not that dissimilar. It is different in that full transcripts, or at least we think the inquiry has committed to publishing full transcripts of what goes on in each oral hearing, and they will be streamed on YouTube. So it may be that occasionally you and I are covering this by watching it on YouTube, but at least we'll hopefully have eyes on it, or as many days as possible, for when that really important piece of information suddenly floats up from the mouth of someone who's being cross-examined.
Yes, absolutely. Please do donate if you can. We'd be very grateful.
Yeah, we ought to explain what the donation will cover. It will cover this podcast. It will cover the operation of the postofficescandal.uk website. It will help you find the time to write your Substack newsletters. It will help me find the time to write my blog posts. Also, everyone who donates will be signed up to a secret email, which will not be published. It will only be sent around by email. And that's something that I've been running since 2018. And it's quite a nice community of people who receive it. And it's basically sometimes a bit irreverent take on the various things that are going on around this story, as well as the straight news reporting that we're hoping to do through this podcast. I feel nervous about this, I have to say. If you can detect a certain amount of tension in my voice, it's because I'm nervous about doing yet another crowdfunding campaign. But, well, since I told the secret emailers who have already donated in some capacity, some of them have been very, very generous, and that's what's giving us the funding to be able to go along to the first inquiry hearing on the 11th of October. The other thing that we're obviously going to try and do by being at the inquiry is interview some of the people who are attending and giving evidence. And we'll also be juggling this with our paid work. So you might need to bear with us about the amount of output that we've got. But we will definitely do our best to get a weekly podcast or written summary out explaining what's been happening over the previous 5 days.
Okay, before we hear from David Enright, I thought it might be useful, hopefully, good for us to have a quick chat about where we're at and what comes next, especially for anyone newer to the scandal who wants a very quick potted summary of the overall story. It's quite a crucial point in the inquiry and probably in the whole scandal overall. So for anyone looking for that quick overview, here's the fastest summary that we could write.
So in 2000, Fujitsu's Horizon IT accounting system was rolled out to post offices across the UK, and that replaced their manual accounting system, which was literally a pen and paper system. It immediately started going wrong and creating losses on postmasters' balance sheets that didn't really exist.
However, instead of investigating the IT and working out what was going on, the post office insisted that Horizon was error-free. It prosecuted hundreds of postmasters for theft and false accounting up until 2013, and it made thousands more pay back significant debts, usually thousands of pounds, out of their own savings.
Across the country, postmasters went to jail, became bankrupt, lost their homes, and even died by suicide. At the same time, their fight back has become one of the most effective grassroots campaigns for justice the UK has ever seen. They mobilised to take the post office to the High Court over Horizon's defects, and they won in 2019.
So the post office did two basic things wrong. Firstly, it prosecuted and forced people to pay back money that they didn't owe instead of investigating the IT. And secondly, after prosecutions ended, it continued to defend Horizon and fought the postmasters tooth and nail in the courts, spending well over 100 million of taxpayers' money.
After it all came out in the wash in 2019, there began a public inquiry in 2020. It's likely to last a couple more years, even from now. Postmasters are still fighting for fair compensation. They're battling long delays. And the final piece of the story is that we may eventually see prosecutions of either Fujitsu or post office managers, or both, potentially around the crimes of perjury or perverting the course of justice.
So we do have a long way to go yet. We're about to start phase two of the inquiry, and there are seven phases in total. Phase one was all about human impact, when we heard from postmasters and their families about what happened to them and how it had changed their lives. And now the inquiry starts the process of unravelling how this was able to happen.
Phase two will be quite technical and will focus on the IT, so the procurement, design, pilot rollout and modifications of the IT system. And then there'll be a third phase which will focus on operation, the training provided, resolution of disputes, knowledge and rectification of errors in the system.
Then the next phase after that, number four, will explore the actions taken against postmasters. So that will look at things like policy, audits, investigations of accounting holes. And then the fifth phase will be all about redress, which will cover the various attempts to achieve justice that occurred over the years. So, for example, there was a mediation scheme, there were various internal reviews, and of course, there was that group litigation, which changed everything.
And number six will cover governance, which for some postmasters is the key topic to focus on. This means, for example, the question of how Horizon was monitored, contractual agreements, stakeholder engagement and oversight. And finally, phase seven will look into what's happening now, what's current practice and give recommendations for the future.
So between phases two, which is just starting, and phase seven, a picture will emerge of who knew what, where and when, how did this happen and how something similar can be avoided in the future.
Yes, and hopefully these next six phases will answer at least some of the questions that have been keeping postmasters awake at night for the last 20 years, and including the cross-examination of a number of key senior executives within the post office, Fujitsu, and civil servants and ministers as well. So I hope that helps. I don't know whether I should say this as part of the podcast or not, Rebecca, but what you have just written is what we in the radio business call a scripted two-way, and it was brilliant. So you're a natural. Is that your first scripted two-way?
Yeah, I didn't know that's what it was.
That's exactly what it was. As I was reading it, I was thinking, do you know what? I haven't done one of these for a very long time, but it was superb. So well done.
Thanks very much.
That sounds really patronising, doesn't it? But I thought it was brilliant. You are setting out the stall of this scandal succinctly, accurately, and in a proper broadcast style. So there
you go. I think anyone listening will be able to tell that I'm very, very new to broadcast. So yeah, not patronising. So coming up after our featured interview, Nick will be telling us what's happening across this first week of the inquiry.
But first, let's hear that exclusive interview. Last week, Rebecca spoke to David Enright of Howe & Co, a firm representing more than 100 victims in the post office inquiry, which is, as we've been saying, restarting this week. What did you speak to Mr. Enright about, Rebecca?
We talked about what to expect from this next phase of the inquiry, but quite broadly, what he hopes will happen and the questions that he wants to see answered, as well as how his clients are feeling at this point. And I started by asking him about the continued delays in compensation for some of his clients.
In terms of compensation, I suppose it's worth giving it a little bit of background. There are a number of different distinct groups, but let's focus for a moment on the group litigation, the 555, as it were. The people who broke this whole scandal out with their bravely taking on post office in the civil litigation, Bates and others. There was a full and final settlement of that claim in 2019, which meant that the people who broke the scandal received a fraction of what they should have been entitled to, morally speaking. Over the past year or so, we, and indeed others, have been pressuring the government to unpick that full and final settlement. We urged Sir Wynne to hear from the victims, which he did in hearings in Belfast, Leeds, Cardiff and London, as well as Glasgow. And that acted as a leverage point, because when you see ordinary decent people who have suffered, it's harder to look away. We then made submissions to the chairman that there was a huge urgency around compensation and it was a matter that he should address first. And that's very unusual. A public inquiry would only normally come to recommendations around things such as compensation at the end of its work, once it's heard all the evidence. So Sir Wynne is to be applauded in that he grasped that issue and understood it needed to be addressed early, and therefore scheduled hearings specifically on the issues of compensation. And then, not surprisingly, the Department of Business made an announcement just before the first of those compensation hearings, trumpeting the fact that they would be providing interim compensation to the GLO sub-postmasters, something we've been urging for since last October, and that they would also be looking to develop a stage two compensation scheme for sort of full, fair and final compensation, which was good. And it's obviously not lost on anyone that it was announced immediately before the first of the compensation hearings. Those hearings happened. We and others set out the huge difficulties that people were continuing to experience because they had not been adequately compensated. The scheme was put in train. The Department of Business contracted with the firm of solicitors called Freeths to deliver that interim compensation. Unfortunately, we started to receive calls from clients of ours saying that they were not receiving interim compensation because their cases had been deemed to be complex. And the key reasons why cases were deemed to be complex was because people were in bankruptcy or were the subject of IVAs. Now, that is an issue we had written to the Department of Business about in March of this year. So many months ago, we'd written to them saying that there are many of these individuals who are in bankruptcy and IVAs. What are you going to do to ensure that any compensation they receive is not swallowed up by their trustees in bankruptcy, etc.? So it wasn't a surprise to the Department of Business. And we then learned, as a result of communications from the JFSA, that some 60 of the 500 or 550 claimants would apparently not be receiving any interim and would probably have to wait until the stage two compensation scheme was developed and published. Of course, that's more than 10% of the group litigants, and it is the 10% who are perhaps the most desperate because they are bankrupt. They are subject to IVAs. So the most desperate people... Sorry,
I was just going to ask, was there any reason given other than the fact that it was complex? Was there any actual, just the fact that it was complex?
We utterly reject the notion that the most desperate victims should receive compensation at some dim and distant point in the future. If there's work to be done, this is how stupid this is. The insolvency agency is the Department of Business. So the Department of Business is able to tell its agency, the insolvency agency, to do X or to do Y. You know, the left hand needs to talk to the right hand. So we robustly raised that issue with BES and said it was unacceptable. We have also highlighted this to the chairman, Sir Wynne Williams, of the Post Office Inquiry. We also raised another issue that BES had refused to implement one of his recommendations to do with persons who had been prosecuted but not convicted. And Sir Wynne, once again, demonstrated that he really was seized of this issue, and he issued a further statement on compensation matters on the 23rd of September. He made it clear that he was not happy about the delay, that he wanted the discussions regarding compensation to continue, but that he would now be listing a further day of hearing devoted to compensation before the end of this year. So the chairman's taking it very seriously, and that's to be applauded.
So you have no sense of why these delays are continuing? There's not really been any clear explanation other than, is it just dithering? I mean,
it's very hard to understand. It's not like this has come as a surprise.
Okay.
You know, this locomotive has been coming down the train tracks for the last 3 or 4 years since the civil litigation. We have written to the Department of Business about it repeatedly, as long ago as last October, setting out exactly what they needed to be doing. We flagged up the so-called hurdles about complex cases to them over 5 months ago. So you do scratch your head and do wonder what is going on at the Department of Business. You know, why are they not putting the people and resources necessary to make an efficient and fair scheme? Just get it done. Yeah. You know, it's got to be in their interests, but it's certainly in the interests of victims. All we can do as representatives of some postmasters is to highlight the failings when they arise, to raise them in the relevant contexts in which we can, which is with the department, but also with the inquiry, and to provide workable solutions, which we have. I mean, just yesterday, we made submissions to the Department of Business, 28-page submissions to the Department of Business about the types of matters that should be included in a Stage 2 scheme and how to make it run efficiently. And we now await their response. You probably know the minister issued a consultation on the 2nd of September, and that was our response and the response of our clients to that.
Right.
We're looking forward to having another meeting with Biz in the near future when we will once again say to them, what are you doing?
So in the summer, your submissions and submissions from the other lawyers for the victims were quite staunch in criticism. You know, it was described, the compensation scheme was described as a scandal within a scandal. So would you say that nothing really has changed? Because it felt quite positive at the end of those two days. You know, there was the 3-week deadline in place. There was further updates. It felt a bit more positive, but would you say it hasn't really changed?
Oh, no. I mean, plainly has changed. There's been a seismic change. The government's cast iron position for the last 3 years is that the civil litigation was a full and final settlement and nothing further would be done. And we have shifted from that, and a large numbers of people have now received interim payments. There are a significant proportion who have not, and that's not acceptable. They are in development of a Stage 2 compensation scheme. So plainly things have moved. They just haven't moved fast enough. Because, of course, some of these victims, we're talking about people who were wrongly prosecuted and convicted in 2000. So we're talking 22 years ago. And we're talking about other people who lost their homes, you know, 15 years ago, more. So they've been waiting a long time. And so we need a little bit of urgency on the part of, side of the department. So, yeah, there has, of course, been seismic movement. It's just not quick enough.
If I can move on to ask you about the sort of upcoming restarting of the inquiry, how are you, I guess, feeling about that part of your work with your clients at the moment? What are you expecting from the next phase of the inquiry, and are there particular sort of key questions that you hope this next phase will answer?
The starting point is we would have preferred it to be the case that compensation had been resolved before this part started. Once people are not wondering how they're going to pay their electricity bills, they can focus more on the facts and the evidence. But there has been a start on compensation, so now we're getting into the who knew what, where and when, and who is responsible. So that will go right back in time to the mid to late 1990s. How was the procurement process handled? It is many people's understanding that ICL Pathway, Fujitsu, who created the system, were not the top bidder. The question is, well, how did you get the bid? Then once the bid was agreed, how was it developed? You know, who was overseeing it? Who was establishing that we had a reliable system if problems were arising? Who was taking charge of that? So we'll be looking into a lot of technical stuff, information and evidence from Fujitsu witnesses and post office witnesses to tell us about how the system was procured, how was it developed, how was it tested, how was it rolled out, and then also what responses were made when people were raising concerns. So it's going to be quite a technical but an interesting period over the next coming. It starts on the 11th of October, and the inquiry has now published its schedule of witnesses for the first 3 weeks, so we can see who's going to be called to give evidence. Counsel to the investigation, Mr. Jason Beer Casey, will be leading the questioning of witnesses. But our counsel will be raising questions on behalf of our clients, or Sam Steen Casey, will be raising questions that our clients will put forward to these witnesses. And we'll want to know, basically, why did you create such a rubbish system? You know, and what did you do to ameliorate the situation? How was this allowed to happen? And, of course, who is responsible? Because thus far, nobody has been held responsible. Even the title of the inquiry is slightly wrong, because it is entitled the Post Office Horizon IT Inquiry. Now, the computer system didn't wake up one morning and decide to wrongly prosecute people or to sue people and take away their homes. A person did that. Computers only do what human beings tell them to do. Really, we need to perhaps remind the inquiry and the public at large that this is not about computer error. You know, this is about human culpability and responsibility.
Yeah, that was something that was raised by Tim Brentnell. He did an interview with Nick last week and he made that exact point. He was worried that potentially the IT would be the fall guy and it wouldn't be the people making those decisions who would be sort of hauled up in front of everything.
Yeah, exactly. Computers don't decide themselves to create shortfalls or to have problems themselves. There's a human being has done that, and a human being needs to take responsibility.
Could I also ask you a bit about how you personally are feeling about the inquiry, given that your firm was involved with the Grenfell inquiry as well? So I'm really interested in whether or not you think there are any similarities at all between the two scandals. Obviously, the details are very, very different, but I guess in terms of the cultures that produce these kind of moral failings, this sort of poor decision making, and then separately, anything that you've taken from the Grenfell inquiry that you hope will be different in the Post Office inquiry, the second phase of it, anything that you're worried about with relation to how Grenfell went?
No, absolutely. I mean, I've actually been doing public inquiries for the last 20 years, both in Britain, Northern Ireland, and Gibraltar. Just about to conclude almost 6 years on the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse, which also dealt with the institutional responses to the abuse of children in care. The key thing we have found from our many years of work on public inquiries representing victims is that you have to listen to the victims. It is often a rush. People just assume that they know what went wrong and they want to rush ahead to a conclusion. And we say, well, you need to stop there. What we need to do, we're only here because there are victims. So let's listen properly to the victims. Let's let them participate, because very few people know more about what has happened than the victims. And they are entitled to be a part of the process. And we will learn a great deal if we listen to them. So that arose in the Grenfell Tower inquiry very early on. There was moves afoot to effectively sort of sideline the victims. And it's something we resisted very strongly. And you may recall the tremendously powerful human impact evidence that was given at the beginning of that inquiry. And it was very important that it happened. It was important to the victims, but it was important to the public at large to give a human face to all of this. And that's something that we replicated in the Post Office inquiry. We thought it was vital that people who had not had a voice for many years were finally given a voice. And many of our clients told us afterwards, although it was very difficult to give evidence in public, that they felt hugely empowered by it and felt that for once they had been heard. So that was a good lesson we drew from the Grenfell Tower inquiry. I have been very impressed by Sir Wynne Williams. He's a judge of significant standing. But he's also clearly a highly intelligent and incisive man. But he also has a wonderful human touch. And that has come out again and again when he has heard evidence from victims. You will see that whilst maintaining his judicial neutrality, he is well able to acknowledge the experience of others. And I particularly recall him noting that a widow who was giving evidence at the time, a wonderful lady called Marion Holmes, who had a picture of her husband, her deceased husband Peter Holmes, on the table. He asked her if she would show it to him so that he could show her that he understood and recognised and wished her husband's memory to be captured by his inquiry also. So yes, I've been very, very impressed by the chair so far, and I think many others have been.
Yeah, and he had that meeting recently with a few postmasters to revisit that human impact side, didn't he? To ask them how to continue bringing that to the fore, because I guess, I mean, you might know this, does that side of things sometimes get forgotten a little bit once you get into the weeds of what happened with corporate decision making.
Yes, it often can be. We as a firm make a very big point of engaging with our clients very regularly. We have sometimes weekly meetings with our whole legal team and counsel, all on a call with 70, 80, 90 of our clients at any one time, so that we can explain what's going on and that they can ask us and our barristers questions directly. We also have a system of providing very detailed briefings to our clients, so that when something happens, we tell our clients what's happened and we make proposals as to what we think they might be in their best interest to do, but then ask them, what do you want to do? Because at the end of the day, it is their case, not our case. And we find that engaging with victims in that way, making sure that they are in the driving seat, really does enhance the work that you do in a complex public inquiry like this.
Definitely. And can I ask you about, I mean, if I'm completely off, you can tell me, obviously, but do you think there are similarities between some of these scandals culturally?
That's an interesting question. One of the things that people often say about scandals is it's not the thing, it's the cover-up that causes the problem. And it would appear to be the case, and we'll have to wait to see the evidence, it would appear to be the case that either was or there should have been significant understanding that this IT system was flawed, and the post office's response to shortfalls was flawed from a very early stage. And one of the questions that will need to be answered is, did you know? If you did know, when did you know? If you didn't know, why didn't you know? So that we can understand why you didn't act earlier. I mean, we can think more than 10 years back to the mediation scheme. Well, did you know then? And if you knew then, why were prosecutions continuing? Why were civil litigation proceeding? Why did you defend the civil claim? You know, those questions need to be answered.
Another thing that occurred to me, so I was reading Richard Moorhead's series of blog posts on the Swift Review this week, and one of the things that he flags up is the way, so it was back in 2013, but the way that postmasters' voices were disregarded a little bit, like one of the things that contributed to what happened was the way that they... yeah, were kind of pre-assumed to maybe not be as reliable witnesses as somebody from the post office, for example. So their testimony was just inherently less valuable. And that reminded me of the way, and just the fact that they had to fight for 20 years to be in this position, to be believed. And that reminded me a little bit of the way that the Hillsborough families, for example, had to fight for a long time to get the truth out. So that's the kind of thing I'm interested in.
And it's a fascinating area. And Professor Moorhead has done some, and his team, it's not just himself, and his team have done some exceptional work around this area and the role of lawyers. When we think of our criminal justice system, often people think of it as some kind of edifice set in granite foundations and in your huge, immovable force or an entity. And it is not. It is like a piece of gossamer waving in the wind. And it only operates if we believe in it and if those who are administering it abide by the rules. We have to have trust that our prosecutors, that our defence lawyers, that our judges, that our court administrators are all acting, in most cases, in a fair and proper way. Because without that, we have no faith in this. One of the big worries in the post office case is that the post office, of course, is the oldest prosecutor in the world. Predates every other prosecution service in the world. It's the oldest prosecution service in the world. Although very recently it gave up its prosecutorial role. But there are huge worries that the prosecutions that were taken by post office, not the CPS, but by post office, were not done properly. Because, of course, a Crown prosecutor, his job is not to prosecute you at all costs. It's to prosecute you so long as there is sufficient evidence that suggests that there is a reasonable likelihood of a conviction and that it's in the public interest to do so. So, prosecutor's duty is to carefully weigh a case and decide, is this a case that should be prosecuted because the evidence supports it and is it in the public interest to do so? But where you have the victim, who is also the prosecutor, then you run into a huge conflict of interest. And you know, just built within that is a worry that the victim, the post office, who has allegedly lost money through shortfalls, for example, will quite naturally wish to pursue a case vigorously, you know, and not in a balanced way. So this case also goes to right to the heart of our faith in our criminal justice and civil justice systems. If those who are charged administering it do not fulfill their role to the very highest standards, it is a deeply dangerous thing because it undermines our general faith in our criminal and civil justice systems.
I wanted to ask you as well, one or two, I understand, I'm not an expert on the Grenfell case, I didn't cover it, but I understand that one or two of the witnesses on the business side only gave evidence on if they were given immunity, or that if that evidence can be used in prosecutions against them. Do you think we'll see that in this case, in this the second half of this inquiry?
That's an interesting question. It's not an unusual thing to get a what's called an Attorney General's letter. People have a right to not incriminate themselves. People have a right to refuse it. You could see a situation where somebody said, I refuse to answer questions. And they'd be perfectly entitled to do so, but that wouldn't be very helpful in terms of getting to the truth of what's occurring. But there is that tension then. Would it lead to people not being held accountable who should be held accountable? It hasn't arisen yet, but let's see if it does.
Okay. So it is possible.
It is. Well, anything's possible, but we'd have to address it when it arose.
Yeah. Okay. And then I guess to sum up, how would you say your clients are feeling at the moment? Are they feeling positive about the eventual outcome, whatever it might be, of the inquiry? How would you say they're feeling at this juncture?
First, it's a mix. Of course, it's a mix. Some people are very hopeful. Some people very pessimistic. But in the main, you must remember that people have been experiencing this for so many years, and they've often had to relate their account to strangers again and again. And you get what we often describe as victim fatigue. You're just sick and tired of talking about how your life was destroyed. That's wearing, very wearing. People are also impatient to get it over and done with. For many people, they are struggling financially, you know, and if you can't put bread on the table, you know, nobody's interested about, you know, the colour of the walls, you know. So people really need the compensation matter to be addressed so that they can then sit back and say, OK, right, now that I can eat, I'd very much like to know why this happened to me. Some of our clients are deeply interested in the technical aspects of the case. A very large proportion do want truth and accountability. And I think that the inquiry has made a good start. As compensation becomes more resolved, I think people will have more time to be able to focus in on and say, you know, yeah, right now I want to know from the top to the bottom who knew what and when and why did they allow this.
That was David Enright of Howe & Co. So thank you very much to him for his time.
I did take some of the questions that David raised to the Department of Business, and they are hopefully coming back to me today. They didn't come back in time for us to record this podcast, so I will put what they say on my Substack and potentially on postofficescandal.uk as well.
If you want to subscribe to Rebecca's Substack newsletter, it's simply a question of Googling Rebecca Thompson Substack, and then you can see all her work laid out in front of you, and just put your email address in and you can subscribe. It's for free to subscribe, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, you just sign up to Substack and then your newsletters are free. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about the inquiry as it restarts this week. Tomorrow, and for half of Wednesday, and when I say tomorrow, I mean Tuesday the 11th of October, we're going to have opening statements from counsel to the inquiry. That's the lead barrister, Jason Beer, Casey, rather than QC, will be telling Sir Wynne Williams, who's the chair of the inquiry, how the inquiry is expected to progress. It will be in, as you can imagine, if he's speaking for a day and a half, considerably more detail than the primer that Rebecca and I gave you before we heard from David Enright. So in that regard, we imagine some new information will come to light in what he says about where the inquiry is going, who they're going to cross-examine, and the answers that they've been able to find so far. Over the rest of the week, so from Wednesday the 12th of October at 2 o'clock onwards, we are going to hear from the solicitors or the barristers representing the core participants. So David Enright is the solicitor for Howe & Co. The barrister who will actually be speaking at the inquiry is Sam Steen, KC. So he will be on the 12th of October. Then it's the turn of Hudgels. Then it's the turn of Hodge, Jones and Allen. Interestingly, right at the very end, for just half an hour, on the 13th of October, the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters are going to say a few words. And I've just found out before we started recording this podcast what they were going to be saying, which was its regrets that it misplaced its confidence in the post office and how it wishes to clear its name following the statements made about it by the post office during the High Court litigation. So that's going to make for an interesting listen at the end of Thursday. And then on Friday, the final day of this first week of the inquiry, that's the 14th of October, you've got the Department for Business, who are going to say their bit over half an hour. UK Government Investments, which is a government department which puts one of its directors on the post office board. Then you've got Fujitsu, who are going to say a few words on that Friday. And finally, the post office. And just to give you a quick overview of what they are expected to say, the business department, BAYS, as you will hear it called regularly throughout this inquiry, will offer an unreserved apology, as will Fujitsu, as will the post office. BAYS will also say how it wants to assist, but also wants to listen and learn, and wants to limit its comments in the first instance to four themes, which are disclosure, compensation, lessons already learned, and the key themes of upcoming phases of the inquiry. Fujitsu talking about things called acceptance incidents remaining unresolved in the system, accepting that bugs could affect postmaster accounts, and that the post office were aware from an early stage that postmaster's accounts could be amended remotely. That in itself is explosive, because that was the basis on which they prosecuted all these sub-postmasters, was that they were the only people who had access to their accounts. Post office will be talking about how it wants to listen and learn, how they have already listened and made changes, and provide updates about compensation. And it says here it welcomes the inevitable criticisms. UK Government Investment says it is going to provide a framework and chronology and an attempt to distance itself from the prosecutions that the post office made and its involvement in the decision making surrounding those prosecutions. So there you go. That's a sort of document, a summary document that's found its way through to me. What do you reckon?
I was also looking at some of the first witnesses to come, and they all look really interesting as well. I'm basically just really interested to hear anything from these first few weeks. I think it will set the tone for what's to come. As things go forward, I'll also be covering the scandal on my Substack newsletter, which we mentioned already, and Nick will be writing on his Post Office Scandal.uk blog.
So please do consider crowdfunding. If you can, just go to postofficescandal.uk/donate. And that means also that you'll be signed up to the secret email newsletter too.
So all being well, you'll hear from us at the end of the week with a review on what has happened at this week's inquiry.
This podcast is written, produced and edited by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace. We are supported with wisdom and expertise by Whistledown Productions.
See you next time.
Take care. Bye-bye.